Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Sefer Yecheskel, Parachet, Chapter 8. In our last parak, Yecheskel detailed the upcoming destruction as well as the reasoning behind it. Bnei Israel have created a corrupt society and deserve what is coming. Now, our parak, Chapter 8, begins a series of four prakim, 8 through 11, which are going to describe a fantastical and jarring nevuah that will play out over these prakim. These four prakim are a continuation of the theme that was described in our last parak, how Bnei Israel have created this corrupt society, but it's going to play out in a very different way. The nevuah begins, V'hi b'shana shishit, it was the sixth year, b'shishi, b'chamisha l'chodesh, the sixth month, and the fifth of the month. So that's actually the fifth of Elul. Ani yoshev beiti, I'm sitting in my house, and we know, just from reading the past prakim, all these strange things that have been happening in Yechezkel's house, all these ma'asim simliim, all these symbolic actions that Yechezkel has been doing, this strange theater, and people would come to his house almost to watch this theater, but we don't hear about it, we just assume that they came. But now, uziknei Yehuda yoshvim lifanai. The pasuk tells us that the elders of Yehuda were sitting before him, Vatipol alai, and at that moment, Vatipol alai, Shem Yad Hashem Elokim, the hand of Hashem fell upon me. The parak begins with the Zakenim, these elders coming to Yechezkel's house. It's not clear why they're there, and it's especially strange because while Yechezkel's other Masim Simliim had to be in front of them, the people had to see it, this one seems to have nothing to do with them. Instead, while they're sitting there, Yechezkel is visited by this Yad Hashem, the hand of Hashem. If you remember, this hand of Hashem, we've seen it before. It stretched out and showed him the Megillah, the scroll that had his Nevuot on it. And this time, the hand of Hashem is going to whisk him away from his home in Bavel to Yerushalayim. It's not clear from the text if this is actually happening or if it's within a prophetic vision, and it's also not clear why this vision is precipitated by the visit of the Zakenim, especially because in this vision, Yechezkel does not interact with them at all. He's literally in a different place. He's in Yerushalayim. As we learn more about the parak and what happens, we will try to unpack these two questions. Why is Yechezkel brought to Yerushalayim in this strange way in the first place? And why is this vision precipitated by a visit of the Zakenim that Yechezkel proceeds to not engage with at all? So first to begin the nevuah. So here we are, Yechezkel is sitting in front of the Zakenim, as we said, Vatipol alai sham yad Hashem Elokim. Yechezkel is going to now enter a prophetic vision, but the vision becomes very physical. It starts even in a physical way, almost Hashem's hand stretched out to me, and it gets more physical when Yechezkel sees a form that he describes as demut kemar e'esh, mimar'e matnav ulamate esh, umimatnav lemala kemar'e zohar ka'ain hachashmala. He sees this likeness which has an appearance of fire, and then he goes on to say, from the appearance of his waist downward was fire, and from his waist and upwards, the appearance of brightness as if it were glowing metal. And this form that Yechezkel sees stretch out its hand and grabs Yechezkel by the hair. And of course, we remember that Yechezkel's hair is very symbolic. He had shaven his hair and divided it into three parts to symbolize the punishment. And then a ruach, a spirit, which of course we also remember from his first vision, lifts him up and takes him bein ha'aretz bein hashamayim, between the heavens and between the earth, to Yerushalayim. I'm not going to attempt to explain this form or the different parts of what Yechezkel sees, but just to understand that the realism that it conveys and the sense of movement that we hear from Yechezkel gives the reader a sense that maybe Yechezkel actually is going to Yerushalayim. We understand how he got there, who took him there, by what mechanism. And the scene itself is so swift, with Yechezkel being yanked away from his home and journeying back to Israel, probably for the first time since the exile to the place that he had left, that he was exiled from. And you can imagine the anticipation as Yechezkel enters the airspace and then enters the gates of the city, even more so than the drive up from Ben-Gurion up Route 1, climbing up the steep hill to enter Yerushalayim. Yechezkel, then after he comes into the city, he's flown straight to the gates of the Beit HaMikdash, the place that he, as a Kohen, would have last seen when he performed the Avodah before his exile. Whether or not this is actually happening or happening within a prophetic vision, we, the readers, can imagine it really happening. And we see this as an exciting homecoming. When Yechezkel sees the place, he has probably despaired upon ever seeing again. And now Yechezkel enters the Beit HaMikdash. He enters the walls of the outer courtyard. And the first thing he sees in Pasuk Dalet is Moshav Semel HaKin'ah HaMekaneh, which Rashi translates as an idol, and one that was intended to provoke Hashem's jealousy, one that was worshipped in order to anger Hashem. Hashem then turns to Yechezkel in wonder, and he says something that's going to become a refrain in this parak. V'yomer elai, ben adam, son of man, haro'eh ata mahim osim? Do you see what they're doing? Toivul gedolot, these horrible abominations, asher beit Yisrael osim po, that the house of Israel is committing here. And you know why they're doing it? L'rachaka me'al mikdashi. They want the result to be that I, God, should go far off from my sanctuary, to leave my Beit HaMikdash. They're kicking me out. And then there's an ominous addition at the end. Va'od tashuv tir'eh to'evo kudolot. And you're going to see other great abominations. And after this seeing, this idol standing there at the entrance to the Beit HaMikdash, Yechezkel does see further abominations. And he moves from the gate, the outer gate of the Beit HaMikdash, to the outside, the next wall that he encounters. And there's a structure. And there he stands before, there's a hole in the wall. And Hashem tells him to enlarge the hole, break it through so he can peek in and see what's happening inside. And Hashem is going to show him all of the abominations that are happening actually inside the Beit HaMikdash. And there he sees, in this room that Yechezkel is peeking into, he sees these images of idolatry, all these creepy, crawly things and these idolatrous animals that are engraved into the walls of the Beit HaMikdash. And there he sees inside 70 Zakenim, 70 elders. And, you know, we're thinking of the Zakenim sitting in his house, and now he sees these elders in the Beit HaMikdash, these 70. The number is reminiscent of the helpers of Moshe, or the members of the Sanhedrin. And these elders are standing there with their leader. His name is Yoznayahu ben Shafan, and they are giving ketoret in front of these graven idolatrous images. And you could just imagine Yechezkel's heart sinks. Here they are, the leaders of Jerusalem. Here they are, the religious leadership, and they're being led by someone from the Shafan family. And if you remember from Sefer Yirmiyahu and from Sefer Malachim, the Shafan family, starting from Shafan, their ancestor or their patriarch, he was the scribe who found the Sefer Torah in the time of Yoshio. And this is a family that always supported Yirmiyahu. They supported Yoshio, and they were always what we call like the good guys. And now someone from this family is leading the people who have turned against Hashem, and it just seems like everybody has. And Hashem says to Yechezkel again, "Vayomer elai pasuk yud bet, verse 12, Haraita ben adam, did you see it, son of man?" And we remember that from the pasuk before. Did you see this? Asher ziknei beit Yisrael osim b'choshech. Do you see what they're doing in the dark? Each person in the chambers of their imagery, ki omrim, in Hashem ro'eh otanu. Hashem will never see us. Azav Hashem et ha'aretz. Hashem has forsaken the land. These are the leaders. These are the ones who are supposed to be teaching the people, judging the people, leading the people to a moral society. And they are the ones that are praying to the graven images. They're hiding from Hashem within the Beit HaMikdash, which has become their center of idolatry. And Hashem wants Yechezkel to see this, to bear witness. Haraita, have you seen? Yechezkel goes further in, this time to the door of the gate. And there he sees women weeping in front of Tammuz, an expression that the Mefarshim disagree on exactly what it means, but they concur that these women are worshiping idolatry. Now further in, Yechezkel enters the inner courtyard, the Chatzar HaPnimit, and he sees a group of 25 men prostrating themselves and worshiping the sun. These are ordinary people who are now in a holy part of the Beit HaMikdash that's really reserved for Kohanim. And there they are, just there. And they're worshiping a foreign god. Hashem again turns to Yechezkel, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Vayomer Elai, Haraita ben Adam? Have you seen this, son of man? It's not enough that they're doing these things inside the Beit HaMikdash. Do you know what they're doing outside the Beit HaMikdash? They're filling the land with violence. Don't think that it's only inside the Beit HaMikdash they worship idolatry. This is an idolatrous way of life that becomes in its expression in the outside world, not in per se the religious world, but in the interpersonal world. It becomes a society of violence that has no ethics. And here they are. They've turned to provoke me in anger. And behold, they stick a branch up their nose. It's a very strange phrase that it ends on. And Malbim explains that this last phrase means the sword that the people would stick into each other, meaning they're like that expression of cutting off your nose to spite your face. These are the people, because of all their violence, they're actually getting killed. They're killing each other. And in fact, notes the Malbim, more Jews were killed by other Jews during the siege, even than the enemy, than the Babylonians. It was their hatred of each other, their corruption of each other that caused the death of so many Jews. And now Hashem concludes this haunting journey with a defeated and devastated pasuk. V'gam ani eseh b'chema, v'lo tachos einai, v'lo echmol. They use the Beit HaMikdash, they turn it against me, but when they turn it towards me, finally, when they're out of options, I'm not going to have mercy on them. V'kar'u be'aznai kol gadol, at some point they will cry out a great cry to me. V'lo eshmaltam. I will not have mercy. I will not heed this prayer. The pattern, and that's the end of the parak. The pattern of Yechezkel's journey takes him from his home, his private space, and then he's quickly yanked out into the public space of the Beit HaMikdash. And there, instead of seeing his beloved lost Beit HaMikdash and the Avoda and the Kohanim, he sees the whole gamut of society, leaders, women, men, each worshiping idolatry in the Beit HaMikdash, which is a mirror of the corruption that's happening outside of the Beit HaMikdash. And Hashem, in each part of the Beit HaMikdash, allows Yechezkel to witness and then says, Haraita, have you seen? Hashem is making Yechezkel a witness in this parak to the things that are happening in Yerushalayim. In the first 7 prakim of the Sefer, Yechezkel finds out that his job is to be a tzofeh. He is there to foretell the coming destruction, the watchman. He will not give rebuke, rather he will bear witness to what is happening. And from that, people can connect their sins to the punishment. But now, Yechezkel is a witness of another kind. He's a witness to the situation on the ground in Jerusalem. What is actually happening there in the heart of the religious worship? And what he finds is idolatry, violence, secrecy, a complete lack of leadership and sanctity. The story of Yechezkel's journey to Jerusalem and his experience in the Beit HaMikdash will continue for the next 3 prakim. But for now, I'd like to address the question that we raised in the beginning of the parak. Why is Yechezkel brought to Jerusalem? And why is the Nevuah precipitated by the visit of the Zekanim to Yechezkel's house, considering he will ignore these Zekanim? He will no longer be in their presence, either because he actually went to Jerusalem, or more likely, because maybe he had entered a prophetic state. Either one works in this parak. So to address the first part of the question, it seems to be that it's not enough for Yechezkel to just tell of the destruction, and the people will connect it to the sins. Yechezkel himself has to connect it to the sins. He himself has to bear witness, Haraita, have you seen, to what's happening in Jerusalem? Perhaps. And in order to explain the second question, why did this Zekanim coming to visit Yechezkel have anything to do with this vision, considering they're really left out of the story for the rest of the parak? And perhaps it has something to do with the year that this parak is happening in. And that is the 6th year of the Galut, so 1 year after the book starts. The Dat Mikra explains that the fact that they counted the years from the Galut of Jehoiachin, meaning when they were exiled, and not, they don't count it the fifth year of Tzidkiyahu, even though actually was the fifth year of Tzidkiyahu, or the sixth year of Tzidkiyahu, which would be when this parak happens, means that they were still loyal to Jehoiachin, the king, and not to Tzidkiyahu. And what's happening now in Israel is that after Galut Jehoiachin, and Tzidkiyahu takes over, and he's going to rule now for 11 years, and now it's been 5 years, so it's his sixth year, the rebellion is really starting, and the people are starting to think about overthrowing the Babylonians, and we talked about this already. And maybe the Zakenim come to Yechezkel for his opinion on whether or not Tzidkiyahu's rebellion would work. Would Jehoiachin be returned to Israel against Yirmiyahu's advice that they would stay in Galut for 70 years? This was also the year, this sixth year, was the year that Hananiah ben Azur predicted that Babylonia would fall and the yoke would be broken, which was a prevalent prophecy against Yirmiyahu's, that the Jews would be returned very soon to Israel. And the Zakenim perhaps want to know if Yechezkel thinks it is true. Would they be returned? Would Tzidkiyahu's rebellion, one that is starting now, would it work? Would Jehoiachin be restored to the throne? It could be possible. After all, Yirmiyahu's Nevuah only said that they would return in 70 years. They would stay in Galut. Maybe if they did Teshuvah, things could happen earlier. It wouldn't be the first negative prophecy that would be changed because the people improved. And maybe in response, Hashem whisks Yechezkel away to show him what is actually happening in Yerushalayim. The same people who are worshiping idolatry, who are leading the people in Hamas and violence, are also running the rebellion against the advice of Yirmiyahu. The ethics and the idolatry and the rebellion, they're all tied together. And how could Yirmiyahu's prophecy be changed to a better one when the people have completely abandoned Hashem? This four parak nevuah perhaps is a response to the question of the Zakenim, which we'll see, we're going to see it completed at the end of parak 11, that the Chorban is going to happen. Babylonia will not fall. The people will not be returned. Instead, the opposite will happen. Yerushalayim will be destroyed and the people there will end up either being killed or going to Galut. Yirmiyahu also sends a letter to the Babylonian community that tells them this as well. And Yechezkel's nevuah of what's happening in the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim is not saying that people can't return and do tshuva. Remember, Yirmiyahu is trying to get them to do tshuva. He's saying they won't. They're very ingrained in their ways. They don't want to. All levels of society have become corrupted. And as Yechezkel himself moves further and further into space and the space of the Beit HaMikdash and into his nevuah, he not only tells of the future, but he bears witness the reason that the future is playing out the way it is. And this becomes the beginning of Yechezkel's journey into the Beit HaMikdash, a journey that's going to take us through Parak 11. The journey of Yechezkel is not over. It's only just beginning. But this parak adds layers to Yechezkel's role as a tzofeh, one who foretells, one who bears witness, and one who will be a crucial piece of the rebuilding and the healing that will happen after the punishment comes. Thank you for learning together Le'ilor Nishmas Barbara Atlas, Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.